Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Big Apple Hockey, which is not going to have any contentious arguments at all today. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be a very kumbaya day, especially after last night's game. I, of course, am your host, Mark Williams, who, contrary to belief, I am not a sellout. And I'm joined by the host of the Final Buzzer, Mr. John Fulkowski.
Bullshit.
That is probably the quickest and best introduction I think ever, Philk. And of course, from the fourth period, a Mr. Anthony LaRocco.
Yeah, quite the tale of two different games last night. Your Islanders looked like world beaters in the first period and then absolute crap in the second and the third. So it was an interesting game, but you know, here we are.
Yeah, and here we are. And now, right now, we have a lot that we have to cover as we go to the A block. And it was an exciting 3-2 game. I think it mattered definitely more towards the guys on Nassau County than it did to the ones in the city. Although the Rangers definitely put up a good fight at the end. Going to rattle off some stats as we're having the discussions. But also remember, Big Apple Hockey trucker hats and shirts are available. And the SeatGeek is what powers the A block. Use the promo code Big Apple Hockey for $20 off your first order. So last night, yes, the Rangers lost 3-2 to the Islanders. Islanders move into solidify their hold on third place. The Rangers 3-1 last week. The Islanders were 3-0. And first, Anthony, let's start with you. We'll get to the hit in a moment. What is your take on the ramifications from last night's game?
Well, I mean, the Islanders needed the game more than the Rangers. I think everybody would agree with that, obviously. Rangers are President's Trophy contender. Where they finished first, second, doesn't really matter too much in the grand scheme of things. The Islanders still fighting for their playoff lives. You know, this is a team that won six in a row, Mark, lost six in a row, and then it looked like they were done. They go 2-2. After that, and now since then, they have rattled off five in a row. So, team certainly roller coaster for sure. But here they are now. They have a real leg up on making the playoffs here. So it was a really huge game for them. And you know, now it's about turning the page to Montreal. We just saw what Montreal did to Philly last night, embarrassing them 9-3. So they can't take them lightly. They have to get the job done against a Canadian team that. Like every team that's not going to make the playoffs right now, playing loose, and those teams are hard to play against. So the Islanders need to pick up two important points against them because, like I said, they're not out of the woods yet. Yes, I mean, I haven't looked, but I'm sure if you look at Money Puck, their playoff percentages after last night, I would imagine it's probably somewhere in the 70s. But, you know, nothing's a given. They still have to rack up points. And, you know, the good thing is they control their own destiny. They don't have to worry about any of the other teams. Thank you, Mark. about any other teams behind them. They just have to take care of business and four games left and, you know, try to finish strong. And for me, wild card, third place in the division. It doesn't really matter where you fall. You just want to get in the playoffs and then see what happens after that. But yeah, it looked like they were dead and now they are looking like they may qualify the playoffs for their second year in a row. So hopefully we'll see what comes out of it in Montreal tomorrow night.
Well, this is also where you look at this and you see that the regulation wins are the first tiebreaker. And that's what we got right there. And this is where the Islanders are at a disadvantage. So they have to keep that in mind. They did block 34 Ranger shots. I never got to show that one right now. And they got themselves in a good spot. But, Philk, going to the Rangers side, last night, look, it sucks to lose your rival, but sort of no harm, no foul, right? They lead Carolina by 3 points.
Still good to have a lead, yeah. Just another period where they didn't show up to play, and that's what happens. I mean, this has been something that's plagued them all year. They don't show up early on in games, and then their second and third periods are amazing. It just, yeah, and... And this is a great point. Blocking shots means that you do not have the puck.
Yes.
Same thing with hits. It means you don't have the puck. That's why Jacob Trouba is no good, because those are the only two things he's good at. So, Islanders got away with murder last night. Not going to lie. I'll throw it right out there. And that hit, intentional. 110% intentional. And I found another clip that shows proof of it. So, I don't want to hear it from anybody. I really don't. I don't at this point.
Well, there's the video of the hit right there in question.
That's not even the clip I'm referring to.
I'll go play the other one in a second.
Yeah, the other one from the other angle shows Adam Pellick look right in Mika Zibanejad's direction, and then it also shows him pulling up to stop and bracing for a hit. Now, let me ask you something. You don't see somebody coming. Can you brace for something?
No, this is my problems with the hit.
You don't know that something's coming at you. What's going to happen? Two things are going to collide, and the one with the lesser force that's sitting there stationary is going to get knocked down, right? Why does Adam Pellick brace for a hit when he doesn't know that somebody's coming at him? It's a dirty play, and you know what? Screw him. Screw him and screw the Islanders, because now on Saturday, you're going to deal with Matt Rempe. And I can't wait to see the ramifications of that. You want to play cheap shots? Cool. Fine by me. Fight fire with fire now, and I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it when someone on that team gets hurt or gets beat up at this point.
Well, Phil, fight fire with fire, great Metallica song.
Yes.
And you know that Peter LaViolette will actually go with that. Anthony, you saw this as more incidental contact, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, Phil's allowed to feel the way he feels, but I read through a lot of different comments and posts. There are a lot of Ranger fans that don't think that Adam Pellick did anything wrong. I mean, Pellick wasn't looking at Mika Zibanejad.
Doesn't right there. You can see his head change. You can see it. Don't even tell me that it doesn't change, because you can see it right there.
No, when they made contact, Adam Pellick is not looking at Mika Zibanejad. He's looking the other way.
It doesn't matter. He looks over at him and sees it. He sees him coming that way. He knows. He's not stupid. You think he's some beer league remedial scrub that has no on-ice awareness of what he's doing? This isn't the first time it happened either. Palmieri interfered when Zibanejad bumped right into him. And you know what happened? He got a stick for it.
Well, on the other hand, I think we're kind of in agreement on the Dobson play was much worse with 16 seconds remaining.
The Dobson play is a complete joke. Kelly Sutherland needs to retire, or he needs to be shot out of a cannon into the sun along with Wes McCauley. Those two are garbage.
But the bottom line out of this is it's a game. There's a loss.
He has a responsibility to be aware. But Adam Pellick is obviously aware of something, and he's still going out of his way to make contact.
But do you think at all Adam Pellick, with his injury history, would try that?
Absolutely. Doesn't matter. You take out a rival's player.
Which he did, because Zibanejad came back for the final shift on the bench.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we're going to see about that. We're going to see about that soon enough. But focusing on the next three games that the Rangers have left, Phil. You got Philly. That's got to be 2 points, correct?
I mean, it has to be. You can't, especially, I mean, I'm going to say this. I don't even care at this point, but they quit on Tortorella. That game last night was an embarrassment.
Well, we're going to get back to that one in a minute.
That's because Tortorella, for the last 2 months, has benched players, has openly bashed their play. And now you're seeing why Tortorella never lasts anywhere. I'm not going to be shocked if he's gone after this season.
Well, because unfortunately,
they cannot afford to lose to Philly, because I don't think Philly's going to even show up. If Philly shows up, I'd be shocked. But you cannot lose to that team after that.
100% got to agree with that one. Anthony, so you look at these three games for each team. What do you think?
What, say that again?
You look at the three games coming up for the Rangers and for the Hurricanes. You look at the Canes, they might go 3-0, but the Rangers need to go 2-1 and it's over.
I don't know. I think the Rangers are going to have first place locked up. I mean, I don't see there's any way that they lose to Philly. And if they do lose to Philly, they need to really look in the mirror, because that team is an abomination right now. When you lose 9-3 to the Montreal Canadiens, when you're fighting for your playoff lives, I mean, that just shows the mentality and the makeup inside that locker room that they quit. So if the Rangers were to lose to them, that's a big concern. From there, I mean, like
100%, Evan.
The Hurricanes play the Blues, right, Mark? Is that what you just is that
the Blues, you just Chicago, and Columbus?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a pretty easy schedule. But again, though, they need the Rangers to what, lose 2 out of 3 to have a chance to pass them.
Yeah,
and I don't see the Rangers losing 2 out of 3. I mean, I think they're going to be Philly. I mean, anytime they play the Islanders, I guess you could consider that a toss up. But I don't know. I don't envision it happening, to be honest with you. I think the Rangers are going to hold on to first place. I would be really surprised if the Hurricanes won the Metropolitan Division. I mean, you got Ottawa. You need to play Ottawa too. You're telling me they're going to – I mean, I don't know. I just don't see it happening. I could see Carolina winning all 3 of those games. Yes, that is possible. But the Rangers losing to 2 out of 3 of Philly, the Islanders, and Ottawa, that I do not see occurring.
Well, I for one, in my fandom over the years, I'll speak from the fandom point of view, and that's I never like playing Ottawa. I just never do. Ottawa always seems to just come up and beat the Rangers out of nowhere.
Carolina now, three gimmies. Ugh.
Yeah, but you know what, Phil? Look, remember last year, Columbus, that was a gimme, and they were trying to tank to get the number one overall pick, and instead they beat the Penguins and knocked them out of the playoffs. So it's one of those things.
It was Chicago that knocked them out.
Well, but Columbus beat them before that.
Yeah, the game before, you're right. You're right.
So it's – And by the way, I do have to hit Evan with this one. This is a great comment right here. Oh, wait, he got another comment in there. Anthony, never underestimate the Rangers' ability to play down to their opponent. And we've all seen it our entire lives.
You could go back and look at the schedule. There are, the San Jose game, they lost in a shootout. They'd have another point.
Overtime, actually.
Yeah, and overtime, sorry. And they would have another point from that one. They lost to Columbus earlier on in the year. You can't lose to Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of these other games.
Lost Columbus twice.
Twice, yeah. I mean, that's four points right there that you would get if you – I mean, Montreal in a shootout. I mean, that's 5 points. They don't really have this locked up.
Of course, let's not talk about lost points to Anthony, because he could definitely give us a lecture on that one. All right, guys, we're going to get over onto the bar talk. But first, because we got a lot of stuff to mention. For instance, one of the guys responsible for the Rangers not getting 2 points in the San Jose game specifically. But also, we're going to be talking about a potential matchup for the Islanders and going around the league. And yes, we'll be talking more about the Flyers in a moment. Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same game parlays. Combine multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot at an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sports app now. Use promo code THPN, bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game, and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at the DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN.
Shot. This is the easiest I've ever had to answer.
I'm going to say beer. I can't even begin to describe.
I'm actually going to go crazy. I'm going to buy everybody around on this one. Welcome back, everybody, to Big Apple Hockey's Bar Talk, where we're gauging our confidence on NHL topics based on our choice of drink. You're so confident you're buying everybody around, so a beer, or, oh, dear God, I'll have a shot. And by the way, just to let you know, you guys over at Ranger Central were starting with a probable layup. So everybody, and again, play along down in the comments below. Philk, going to start you up. And like I said, pretty much a layup. Rangers defenseman since February 5th. Eric Gustafson, 7 points. He's an even rating in 25 games. Zach Jones, he's got 4 points and a plus six rating in 15 games. And the Rangers need to play Zach Jones over Eric Gustafson. Like I said, there was an easy layup on this one. I think I got it right there. I didn't even get the gift.
Anything because everybody in the chat was basically thinking the same thing.
Oh, of course. Like I said, there was going to be an easy one right there.
You talk about since February 5th. Gustafson's been terrible since about December.
Yeah.
His defense has fallen off big time. I would say if we're going to be generous, we'll say January. But just – this is just I don't know if there's ever been a bigger layup in the history of this segment.
I you know what? I'll spare Anthony the ability to go second right here. I've been tooting this horn for a long time. And Philk, I think I've been on that since December. He's been terrible. He's been absolutely terrible. This is the reason why this guy can't stick. He plays about 2 good months. You think you should stick with him the rest of the time. And then off to another team. And how many teams has he been on? Like, I can name Chicago, Montreal, Calgary, Washington, Toronto, the Rangers. I think a visit back to Chicago. He's got the shelf life of milk.
He also was on a PTO for the Islanders.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Item.
Oh, so Anthony, what do you think? Gotta go with Jones, right?
It's around. I mean, the knock on Eric Gustafson has always been, you know, he's a guy with good offensive instincts, but his game defensively was just simply bad. And at the beginning of the year, he was playing well. He was playing actually solid to the point that I remember early in the year, we actually all praised him for his play. But obviously he's reverted to the means and he hasn't been good. And, you know, the only thing I can think of from Laviolette's angle is, you know, maybe he wants a guy with a little bit more experience in the lineup, but I don't subscribe to that because I think Zach Jones could still do a better job. So this is a round.
And I've been on record saying Zach Jones probably isn't an NHL defenseman. I've come around on that. I think he's gotten a lot better, especially in the last 2 months. And Philk and I discussed this last week. Pair him with Jacob Trouba. Use them on the bottom pairing. Promote Braden Schneider. And everybody gets better. Well, except Jacob Trouba. I don't know whatever could
be. Yeah, Gustafson and Trouba together as a pair just seems like an absolute disaster by the eye test and analytics standard. So I don't even want to.
However, Philk, you play them less.
Play them like. I get that. Yeah, I get that. But I would rather see Jones play with Trouba if they're going to have to play Trouba because they're not going to play Trouba. Let's just be real. The captain is going to play. He's going to, whether we like it or not, whether how bad he is, whether it doesn't matter what the issue is. He's going to play. He had an issue last year where he played through an injury and absolutely refused to let Gallant sit. I don't understand how a guy this bad has this much control over an organization. And Chris is right. He's the worst player on this team right now. It's not close.
Yeah.
At least Barkley Goodrow isn't a total net negative to the point where every time he's out there on the ice, you fear that a goal is going to get scored on them. At least Barkley Goodrow can have okay games with that fourth line, even though he's terrible by his own standards as well. I mean, it just – at what point does the coach actually take over and say, I don't care how much you're making. I don't care what your cap hit is. I don't care what letter you have on your jersey. You're sitting because you're not good enough right now. When?
That's a great question. And he's going to have to make that decision. If they're going to do that, they got to do it sooner than later. You got to give him some regular season games for those two to get in there. Because also, by the way, I keep talking about this over and over again. Matchups, matchups, matchups is what matter. And also, going with what matchups can potentially happen in a little over a week, the New York Islanders versus the Carolina Hurricanes, 2-1-1, and versus the New York Rangers, 1-1-1. The Islanders match up better against the Hurricanes than they do the Rangers, Mr. LaRocco.
I am actually going to disagree with this. I mean, first I'll say pick your poison. The Hurricanes and Rangers are two really good elite teams, so it would be a challenge for the Islanders. However, the Hurricanes have really handled the Islanders every time they've played them in the playoffs. The Islanders swept the Penguins that year and then went on to play the Hurricanes and got swept themselves. And then last year they lost in six games, much closer series, but they still lost. The style that the Hurricanes play, I think, gives the Islanders more of a difficult time because they're a much stingier team defensively. Whereas the Rangers, I think the Islanders would have an easier time at least generating offense against the Rangers than they would the Hurricanes. But, I mean, either or, like I said in the beginning, it would be a really tough matchup. But my preference would be to play the Rangers, and that's not, you know, any disrespect towards the Rangers. They're a really good team. I just don't like the way the Islanders play the Hurricanes, dating back to years now. And I think when you consider the rivalry between the Rangers and Islanders have, these games are typically always close. So I'd rather play them than the Hurricanes. But at the end of the day, you can't be picky, right? You just get in the playoffs and hope your team can, you know, work some magic. But for me, I'll say they match up better against the Rangers than they do the Carolina Hurricanes.
Phil, which one do you think?
This is a shot. It's just an absolute shot. Take a look at their recent record in like the playoffs against them. And now Gensel's getting going for Carolina. This is a really bad matchup for the Islanders. I honestly think that this series may be over, and I think the Islanders would be lucky if they get the six against Carolina. Unless Sorokin goes back to God mode, I don't see how they stand a chance against Carolina. I'm not trying to just bash the Islanders or whatever because of sour taste from last night, but like Anthony said, the Hurricanes are a really, really bad matchup for them, and they've played them very, very tough. I mean, take a look at that last year's playoff series. You now then go ahead and try to tell me that Islander team that's playing right now is better than the Islander team last year, and tell me that the Carolina Hurricanes team is not a better team last year than the one that they're icing this year. Not only that, but Carolina, as I stated last week, they've improved their penalty kill over the last few years. They're one of the better penalty kills in the league. The Islanders' power play that started off great was a top 10 unit. Noah Dobson was up there in the Norris race, has fallen off, and now they're, what, 20th or 21st in the league now?
Oh, the Islanders' penalty kill?
No.
That's my answer, Phil. Thanks for leading me in, Phil, because I'll do this right now.
Power play. Power play he's talking about.
The power play. Oh, it's dropped. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The power play has fallen off hard with them.
20th.
Yeah, so they're 20th now. They went from, I think it was like either 6th at their highest to 20th. They've dropped 14 spots, and honestly, I don't think the Islanders can really generate the offense against them because the Hurricanes are going to ground them in their zone for a lot of the time because the Islanders, and even I think Sam and Joe were saying it last night, that the Islanders' defense is not an overly mobile defense with great puck movers outside of Dobson. And that's a big problem against a team like Carolina. That's why I was so highly, you know, I really praised Zach Jones for the way that he played that last game against Carolina. Because out of all the defensemen, he was the best one at getting the puck out of the zone and moving it out effectively and starting up the breakouts. You need defensemen like that against Carolina. Because that's one of two ways you're going to beat them. The other way, quick breakouts with perfect passing out of the zone. It has to be bang, 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 and out. Because otherwise, they will suffocate you in your own zone, and they will destroy you. And the Islanders are not great at moving the puck out outside of a guy like Dobson. Pelech's not great at it. Pulock is okay at it. Romanov is decent at best. Who else do they have that's really a great puck mover? Dobson's the one guy that gets it done for them. So that, yeah, that's honestly, a Mike, big disadvantage.
Honestly, Mike Riley is probably their next fastest puck mover. But
they, he's not even great.
Other than that, they struggle in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to argue with what he said. I mean, I think across the board, the Hurricanes aren't a great matchup. And I appreciate, you know, Pukki is saying that given the Islanders kind of a do here. But, I mean, I would still, you know, if this was the playoffs started tomorrow and we were doing our previews, I would say the Hurricanes in five or six again, like last year. That would be my pick. So
yeah, and but, last year yeah, you guys were actually picking the Islanders to win, and I'm the one that picked Carolina to win.
You just got to get in, and then you know see what happens.
Guys, I will upgrade this to beer only for one reason, and that's because the Islanders will go into that series with, well, let me say this: the worst penalty killing against the two teams, either one of them, are tied for second best power play in the NHL. That's not good for the New York Islanders. What the Islanders will have is two goaltenders that are better than any goaltenders on the Carolina roster. Although we're going to be looking at Carolina's numbers in a second, because we're going to go quickly through this next topic, which is you look at the Philadelphia Flyers at playoff chances, guys. They were 88% just 2 weeks ago. Now it's all the way down to 4%. The Flyers have quit on John Tortorella after the 9-3 drubbing that they got last night. Filk has already said, yes, they quit. Anthony, did they quit?
I mean, I want to say no, because I think even if the Flyers miss the playoffs despite their collapse, I still go back to the school of no one thought the Flyers were even going to – a lot of people had them in the lottery. So I think they exceeded expectations, and I think a lot of that is because of the job that John Tortorella did. Now, how he's operated the last 2 weeks with, you know, kind of calling out his guys, and I mean that certainly holds water. He might have done some damage there, but at the same time, you know, he's trying to be a coach that's not going to sit idly by while players aren't giving him the effort that he expects. So if the players are truly doing that, I mean, aren't they kind of soft then if you can't handle your coach kind of calling you out and being tough? So it's like, I don't know. Like I honestly still like Tortorella a lot and what he did with Philly, but it seems like, yeah, the players might have turned on him a little bit. So I won't go round. I'll go beer. But I mean, with not having watched the game last night, I'm not going to lie, I didn't see any highlights or any footage of it. I mean, a 9-3 drubbing in the situation they're in does point to the fact that they, you know, waved the white flag.
Bill, you already said it before. I'm going to bounce it right back to you. What do you think? They quit?
I'm going around on this. I'm sorry. You just, when your season's on the line and you got a team that's beatable like Montreal, and I'm not saying Philadelphia is this super talented team. This is an absolute another layup. I think we're just going to rename it permanently to layup talk if we're going to go this way. But how do you give that type of effort? And not only that, but another thing. They waited to go down 6-0 before finally starting playing. They scored a goal. You know what happened then? They lit
that one up right away.
More to go down 8-1. And then scored two goals. That tells me that they were going through the motions in that game. And the way that they've played down this stretch, combined with what Tortorella has said in the media, the way that he's handled players like Sean Couturier, it just tells me that he's lost this club. He's lost them. And, I mean, we've seen this before. He's lost them. I would not be shocked if he is fired after this season. And yeah, Sam Ersson, and I said that, Sam Ersson was not somebody that I wanted to be relying on after the whole Carter Hart thing with his, you know, involvement in the uh, the Team Canada scandal. So, I get it. There are guys that are being thrust into spotlights that they had no business being thrown into. I even mentioned Ivan Fedotov last week.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta look at it this way. They were there. There were no problems. And then all this stuff with Tortorella happened. Now, I don't think they were affected by Hart's departure because they still played well afterwards. They were still maintaining that playoff spot. And that's the point. That's why I truly believe, and deep down inside, in my heart of hearts, that they quit. Because they played well for so long. And then the one, yes, Pete, thank you. Once the Couturier stuff happened, that's when everything started falling apart. This last month or so, I would say more so the last 2 to 3 weeks, was when they started falling apart. That's it.
You know, something. I am going to go just beer on one thing. And, well, a couple things. One, we were expecting this team was just going into the tank. They ended up being in a playoff spot basically the entire season. Tortorella did a great job. He was my midseason coach of the year. But, yes, you're right about this. As soon as the Couturier thing happened, he lost a lot of the locker room. As soon as the Carter Hart thing happened, Urson had to play every single game. He's not ready for that yet. He's completely gassed right now. And I think a lot of the guys on Philly are gassed because now they're playing and doing more than what they ever expected to be. I mean, Owen Tippett isn't even doing as well right now. But, I mean, it's just – look, Tortorella does have this ability to just burn guys out mentally. And he probably did that too. I think all these things could be correct. And it's just going to be interesting to see how they're going to move on from him in the offseason and whether or not they are. Anthony, quickly. You think he's done, Philk? Anthony, quick.
After this season.
Ooh, that's tough. I mean, there's a new regime there, right, in Philly with Keith Jones. I mean, he may look at it in the lens of, look, my team wasn't supposed to compete this year, right? And the fact that they overachieved and weren't a bad hockey team for the majority of the year, for him, I think he might hold on to his coach. That's just my inkling.
We're going to see about that, and also whether or not they're going to go with somebody that's more developmental to coach them. By the way, the opposite of a team playing bad like Philadelphia is, the original one that I had in here until we saw those numbers, Carolina Hurricanes. You look at Pyotr Kochetkov and Freddie Anderson. Those are great numbers since the All-Star break, and they're coming out of it. Carolina has Stanley Cup worthy goaltending. Guys, I'm going to start this one off. Beer. You look at those numbers, I should be saying round. Here's the problem. There's two goaltenders. Who is going to be the goalie in net? You're not going to know which one is going to be in net, but Freddie Anderson is going to be healthy. When suddenly Kochetkov is going to have a bad game, I don't know anything about these guys. And I know what you're about to say, Anthony, and I'll turn it over to you right now. Mark, tandems won the last 2 years. You're somewhat right. You're wrong in this. They were tandems in name only. Francois took over for an injured Darcy Kemper. He didn't have to worry about looking over his shoulder. Last year, Aiden Hill took over when no one else was effective in Vegas. He didn't have to look over his shoulder. When you got guys, whether they're successful or not, like the Boston guys, they're going to be wondering, is my game? Or if the next guy's starting tomorrow, can I win that game? Because I'm not going to be in net, and you put more pressure on yourself. Anthony, I'll see it to you.
So what Pete just said kind of points the direction I was going to go. I mean, Jordan Binnington, Aiden Hill, Darcy Kemper. I mean, these guys won cups. They're not elite goaltenders. Freddie Anderson and Kochetkov, they're good enough. They're playing well. They play behind a really, really good team defensively. So, yeah, I mean, sure, they're not elite goaltenders. They're not Connor Hellebuck, but I think the Hurricanes can get the job done with them. I think that's the truth of the matter. As long as they play their game, they play good defense, they get goals. So you know what? I'm gonna go I'm gonna go round because I think it's good enough. I think it's good enough that they can win a cup.
Philip, what do you think?
Shot, and because we've seen it before. And yeah, you could say the team in front of them was probably better. Now they have a little more scoring, but I don't trust this. I don't trust the goaltending at all. I don't. Anderson is not. He's never healthy, and when he's been in the playoffs, he still hasn't gotten the job done. Kochetkov is completely unproven. I mean, yeah, the Gensel move is really the issue there. You could talk about Antti Raanta from 2 years ago. They had something better than Antti Raanta last year, and they still lost.
Freddie
Anderson, and they still lost.
And the last time he won a conference finals game, he was wearing a Ducks jersey.
You could point to Gensel. Sure, great. But in the end, you do have to have a decent level of goaltending. And I'm not buying either of those goaltenders against. I'm really not. And you know, you could say that all you want. Goaltenders weren't good enough, and Bobrovsky was better. And that's what it comes down to in the end.
And let me throw this one out there. If there's a tie game in the third period, can you see one of those three goaltenders letting in a goal that just completely deflates the team, and then it kills them in the series?
Absolutely. And it's happened before.
And it's going to happen again. And that's why, look, they got one of the best defense corps in the league, if not the best, which would prove, going back to Vegas, you need a better defense corps than anything else.
Okay, so if two guys killed you, your team wasn't good enough.
Yeah,
your goaltending definitely wasn't good enough to support that team.
And so even
if that's what you're going to admit to, then you're proving me right indirectly.
Like,
so thank you for that.
You would need that when you get your goaltender that needs to shut the door. And what you also need is goal scoring. And guys, nobody puts the puck in the net more right now than Austin Matthews. Scored his 66th of the season, passing Alexander Ovechkin's 65 goals in 07-08. Bilk, Austin Matthews is the best modern-day goal scorer. We'll say post-lockout to make it easier.
I know what you meant by this. So I'm going to go round. And the reason why I'm going to go round is if you look at their numbers through their first, I think this is 8 years for Matthews. And I was doing this recently because I was really curious, because I honestly think that Matthews could end up passing both Ovechkin and Gretzky if all goes right. So through the first 8 seasons right now, in 558 games, Matthews has 365 goals. He's led the NHL in goals 3 times. You want to know how many times he's led the NHL in even strength goals?
How many times?
5. Matthews is one goal away from becoming the sixth player in NHL history to have a season of 50 even strength goals. 50.
Wow.
50. Yes. What he's doing is at a level that we probably haven't seen since Gretzky or Hall. And no disrespect to Ovechkin, who's phenomenal, but through his first 8 years, the numbers are close, but I would actually give the edge to Matthews. So through his first 8 seasons, he played 601 games and had 371 goals. He led the league in even strength goals 3 times. 3 times. Matthews in 558 minus 601, that's what, 43 games, has only as only, what was it? I said 371. Jeez. He has only five less goals in 43 less games through his first 8 years. And that's with Matthews missing 20 games in 2018, the COVID stoppage in 2020, the COVID shortened season in 2021, in which he had 41 goals in only 52 games and led the league. Another year in 2019 where he missed 14 games, 2022 where he missed 9 games, 2023 where he missed 8 games. So he's missed quite a bit of games, and he's right there with Ovechkin through their first 8 years, outscoring him big time at even strength. This is a round for me. It's not a layup, but it's absolutely a round for me.
I'll flash that up. I mean, Phil, you were spitting out so many stats. I was like, all right, what's the last stat you're going to throw out there? Because I was waiting to turn this over to Anthony, because I know he's going to make the case for Ovechkin, correct?
Yes, I've always been a huge Ovechkin fan. But there's also no denying Austin Matthews is a, one of the elite goal scorers we've seen play in this league since he's come into it. For me, I'm gonna say beer only because, and Phil threw out a lot of stats there. But I guess at the end of the day, Alex Ovechkin is 40 and change away from Gretzky's record, may end up breaking it. It's hard for me to say that the guy who could potentially be the all-time leader in goals isn't the best modern-day goal scorer. So I'll say beer, but Austin Matthews, if there's anybody that could catch Ovechkin and Gretzky for that matter, other than Ovi himself, it would be Matthews.
I'm going to go beer on this one as well, and it's barely a beer because, he is just cruising right through the league. And as Phil said, Austin Matthews has missed games. Ovi never missed games. And Matthews has come back just as good as he was.
Ovi missed his what would have been his rookie year because of the full season lockout.
You can't use that, though. Whole season. You can't use that because there's no guarantee that he would have played.
Yeah, that's where a good point on that one is. However, imagine if they let him come over, and it would have been right there. So, would he have to have served in the KHL for a couple of years?
Possibly.
Yeah. They were able to wave him over. Cause after all, that's what is going on.
Here's the question in terms of the current times. Matthews needs 4 goals in 4 games to reach 70. Does he do it?
Phil, you go first.
It's very possible. I don't know if he does, but it's very possible. But if he does, he goes on to a very, very rare list of players. And I think he would only be the third player in NHL history to score 50 even strength goals in a season while scoring 70 in a season in total. It would be the fourth. It would be Solani, Hull, and Gretzky, and that would be it.
He gets the Devils tonight, home for Detroit. Not exactly defensive stalwarts either places. Then it's Florida and Tampa.
Sorry, he'd be the sixth. Curry actually did it.
Yeah. Tampa has nothing left to play for, so maybe there's a goal in there. I think he does it, guys. I'm going to go with yes, he does it. Anthony, what do you think?
Honestly, I think if he scores a goal tonight, I think he does it. Because I think at some point the guy's going to have a 2-goal game, which would leave it really could just be down to one game. He just needs 1 goal. So I'm going to say yeah. I'm going to say he does it too.
Follow-up question really quick. And again, really quick. Yes or no? Do they catch Florida, whom they are 3 points behind right now with a game in hand?
No, I think Florida holds on to that.
Phil?
Well, I'm sorry. What was the question?
Do the Leafs catch Florida 3 points back with a game in hand.
Catch Florida. No, I don't think so. I think Florida closes that out and stays at second. And that's your first round matchup right there. Toronto versus Florida in Florida to start the series with home ice advantage.
Guys, by the way, we mentioned this guy's name 2 weeks ago when we did a couple of upsets, potential upsets, but somebody has been playing really well right now since February 1st. Roman Josi, 11 goals, 24 assists, 35 points, second best numbers in the NHL as far as points go. He's only behind Evan Bouchard. But Roman Josi and the way he's playing, he will finish top three in Norris voting, Mr. Larocco.
Yeah, before I go, I'll answer this, and you know, I'll say round. He really came on. The guy got snubbed a few years ago. I mean, he's not going to win it this year either, but you know, he really drives the Predators along with Philip Forsberg. You could argue that he might even be the most important Nashville Predator. But I mean, for me, I mean, Hedman's also right behind him, kind of in points, but I'm going to go, I would say Josi deserves to be in the top three. So I'll go round.
All right. Anthony, thanks very much for joining us. Take it easy.
Hey, guys.
Take it easy.
All right. And I was going to say, why isn't that shifting out? Oh, because I had to remove them. Anyway, Philk, going right to you. What do you think? Top three in Norris voting.
I'm going to say beer. If the word was should, it would be an absolute round because I truly believe that he's had an excellent season. And like Anthony said, I think he's probably the most important national predator. Their turnaround and play and their success and that heater that they went on directly coincided when his play just took off completely. He's got 21 goals and 80 points this year. He's better than Hughes. He's better than McCarr this year. He's better. I think he should be the winner. If you ask me, he's the guy. There is no defenseman to me this year that has had a greater impact on both sides of the game than Roman Josi has, and has been more integral to his team's success than Roman Josi has. Quinn Hughes has put up great offensive numbers. Yeah, that's cool, but he's nowhere near the defenseman that Roman Josi is. Neither is Cal McCarr. I'm sorry. Those guys just aren't that good defensively in their own end. I mean, if you want to talk about Victor Hedman, I could see Victor Hedman getting votes. Okay. Yeah. Got no problem with that. But whether or not I think it'll happen and whether or not it should happen are two completely different things. So for this case, I'm only going to say beer, but he should win the Norris this year. He's been the best.
Let's also not forget Adam Fox missing a month, given what he's put up this year and done. I mean, I know his month of January wasn't as good as what a lot of Ranger fans would have wanted, but you know something? He has played. Yeah, he was coming back from injury. And Ryan Lindgren was also nicked up, too. Sometimes your defense partner not having it also could hurt you, but and especially your goaltender at that time. But the other thing to kind of mention in, and I wonder how much recognition he's going to get, is going to be Evan Bouchard. I'll get back to him in 1 second because he's putting up great numbers. Right now, Bouchard has got he's got 79 points. I think a little bit of that might be sort of like Tyson Berry leading the league in scoring. I'm not trying to take away anything from Evan Bouchard. He's done a great job, but I think Josi just basically said, climb on my back, boys, him and Philip Forsberg, and that's all the Predators have needed. And they're being coached exceptionally well by Andrew Brunette. But going back to Evan Bouchard, who, like I said, number one defenseman in points since February 1st, Philk, if you look at the Pacific Division, 104 points for the Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton 99. They have two games in hand, so they could be 1 point back of Vancouver with those two games in hand. Edmonton winning the Pacific is crucial for their playoff success. Get the gift?
Yeah, get the hoop.
It's right there. It's always with me, guys.
Just, yeah. I mean, really, it's It's like, does Edmonton want to win the division? It's basically what you're asking. You know that, right?
But if they don't win the division right now, they don't win it. They end up getting LA if everything stays the same. How would you feel if they got Vegas in the first round?
I mean, obviously you want to play LA over Vegas, but I mean, at the same time, you want home ice throughout the playoffs, or at least in the first couple of rounds or so. So it's just, yeah, we're going to start asking you to perform layups on camera.
Well, trying to discuss the fact that Edmonton has actually closed the gap so well with the Vancouver Canucks. I actually don't think they catch them, but this is where I'm kind of going with this. It's not that it's crucial. So you'd want home ice. Everybody wants home ice. We all know this. But if Edmonton faces LA for the third year in a row, they'll decimate LA. They'll go right through them. This isn't LA's team last year or even the year before. This is LA's team now.
Yeah, I think that Dubois trade screwed everything up with them. I really do. And you could see Winnipeg reaping the benefits of that trade. It's like role reversals with them.
Now, my question would be, if you look at the two hottest teams in the league since Thanksgiving, it's the Oilers and the Nashville Predators. And I don't know whether or not that's the best matchup for them. I think they could beat Nashville. Obviously, that's true. But Nashville might give them a little bit more of a tougher task, make it a harder road for them to go down. And then maybe you get – I would say you probably get Vegas in the next round after that, because assuming Vegas moved up to face L.A., I'm trying to figure out a path for Edmonton that's going to be easier for them. I think either way, they're going to have trouble should they get to the conference finals, because they're playing a Colorado team, a Winnipeg team, or a Dallas team, which can defend and score better than they can on both levels. And I did say score. No offense, Connor McDavid. And Phil, last one. This is just to talk about it, so it's probably a layup anyway. Potential number one overall pick, Macklin Celebrini, is going to the Frozen Four with Boston University, and they're going to be playing against the Michigan Wolverines. Also, University of Denver and Boston College rounding out the Frozen Four. The NHL needs to do more promotion for the Frozen Four.
Round. College hockey is so much fun. And you figure with the March Madness and the tournament brackets, I mean, I get it. You know what? You can get fans into college basketball. You can get fans into pro basketball by getting them into college basketball. We've seen it work. You could do the same for the NHL, because college hockey is fun. It's a ton of fun. It really is. But it seems like they can't advertise their own sport. How are they going to help something else? You know?
Yeah. They need to hype these guys up even more. And just what you said also, I'm going to make it around, and I'm going to even say this is an even bigger layup, guys. Yes, I guess I'll start doing layups. I don't even hit the backboard when I do layups. That's why I was a terrible basketball player. So the thing I'd say with this one, Phil, they need to start getting people to attach the college team to the player, and then you get to you just get that familiarity. And then when you're thinking about that player getting drafted, because one of the other problems is with the NHL, you could draft a guy, they'll stay in college. And in the pros, you're waiting for them to show up. With basketball or football. You're like, you can go get his jersey.
Yeah, this is the way to do it from John Rattigan here.
Yeah.
I mean, having more games on NHL Network and having more games on like the main channels, like ESPN, ESPN2, ABC, stuff like that, where, you know, and I get it, the TV deals probably aren't as prosperous for...
I think they're still with ESPN.
What's that?
I think they're still with ESPN.
I mean, yeah, I'm just saying they need more viewership, and they need more deals to have them on, you know, more publicly available TV. So if you can do that, then you know you go ahead and you put together a good schedule of games, and then you have the NCAA, you know, the tournament, and just go from there. And you could try to market the game that way. That would be really the way to do it. But they're not going to, they're not going to do anything. This is really kind of the point here. I mean, I don't even really know much about Caitlin Clark. I just know about her trash talking that other girl. And I mean, I don't follow women's college basketball at all, but I know about that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the NHL has Connor McDavid going into Connor McDavid, I swear, must be sitting there before each season and saying, what rare feat can I do this season? Because he becomes less than a handful of players in NHL history to score 60 goals and 150 points in a season last year. What does he do this year? He's going to become the fourth player in NHL history to break the 100 assist mark in a season. What can this guy not do aside from win a Stanley Cup?
What he has done, he's just been amazing on every single level.
Promote him.
I also, Connor's got a little bit more of a personality than what other guys got. I mean, nobody's Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews has got personality to spare, him and Mitch Marner for that matter.
But Chuck is a personality.
Chuck is a personality. And that's one good, that was a goldmine rush for the NHL because you had the NHL on TNT. He's going on his rush. He ends up going on the NBA on TNT and getting a little bit more exposure and showing off his personality. Look, NHL marketing, we always talk about this. They need to show off the players a lot more. This one, they need to attach everything coming from the ground roots because no fan, average fan, knows who was in the OHL, the QMHL, the Quebec Major Junior League.
QMHL.
I messed up the letters on that one. Trying to get out.
Prospects. We get that.
But we need to get more exposure to them. And NHL Network, yeah, you guys hit the nail on the head. They need to do more of that. So, first off, thanks to 100 of you that are watching us right now. Thanks for watching Big Apple Hockey's Bar Talk. We gauge our topics, our confidence on NHL topics based on our choice of drink. Yes, there were a couple layups, guys. Thank you very much. Philk, we got to discuss this one, and we're just discussing it because there really is no way to say it. But the NHL is gaining momentum to move the Arizona Coyotes to Salt Lake City specifically. As a guy that's been a proponent for hockey in Arizona, and by the way, I do think they would still go back there any moment. Look, I gotta say, I think this has to happen. And I just did a video back in October of when I went to go see them. Coyotes got a bright future. You gotta go to Salt Lake City, right?
They don't seem to be wanted in Arizona. I mean, it's sad because if they had a stable ownership group that wasn't cheaping out the cities on money and stuff and not paying and all this other garbage that they've been doing, I mean, you have the blueprints of what could be a really good franchise in anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And while that would be a blessing in disguise for something like or for a city like Salt Lake City to have a team come in that's on the rise, that's young, that's exciting, that's fun to watch, I mean, it sucks that you're going to lose this in Arizona. They tried for so long, and the Coyotes, iconic jerseys. Those jerseys are iconic. I mean, it's just now you got the Scottsdale mayor making trouble, like Joe Graves is saying here.
Which is why.
Why are you causing trouble? They didn't even want anything to do with Scottsdale. And the location in North Scottsdale is where they should have been. I agree.
Yep.
Should have never went to Tempe or Glendale or anything like that. I disagree with this. I think Arizona can thrive. I think hockey can thrive there. The Coyotes,
they have a number one draft pick who is the top goal scorer in the game right now. that came from there.
They came from Scottsdale specifically. Yeah, okay, he was born in California. Great. He was raised in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
He's the first ever player that is born or that is raised and trained in Arizona to come up and be a real big impact player. Name me another. And don't tell me Josh Doan because he just made his debut the other night.
I think there was a guy. I'm trying to remember who it was. It wasn't Cutter Gauthier. There's another guy that came from Arizona. So, I mean, Arizona's starting to be a hockey, like, I don't want to say a haven or a hotbed, but they're developing their talent. And, yes, it took time. I mean, the same way it took time for Florida to do this, and now they're starting to churn out people. But if I remember correctly, the first player drafted from the state of Florida was Blake Jeffrion, if I remember correctly. But somebody could fact check me on that one. Look, I actually don't want to see them go, but right now politics is wrapping up in all this. And just sell the land. Who gives a crap? And if they're not trying to take public funds, then it's not even an issue either.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing. If they're not taking public funds, then why does anybody care?
Yeah. I mean, and the NHL is trying to get this done, but realistically speaking, in 10 weeks, let's say they get the land. How long is it going to take to get an arena built? How long is it going to take to cultivate that? In the meantime, they would have to relocate temporarily to Salt Lake City if they did do that, or maybe even play in Tempe, where they played in a basketball arena. Or not Tempe, sorry. That was with the Phoenix Suns. I mean, it's too hard to do. The number one thing, though, Phil, city planners screwed them. You put them in Glendale. And I understand what they were trying to do. They were trying to get all the sports arenas all in one place. Like, it happens with a lot of people.
And this is my biggest gripe. They're not taking public money or affecting anyone's taxes. And you can create over 10,000 jobs out of that?
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that that's not good for your economy.
It's mind boggling. It's absolutely mind boggling why Arizona would be against it. And we're still there's still a Hail Mary.
It's got to be something with the politicians not liking the ownership group or something. That's the only thing you could think of because it doesn't make any sense.
Okay. But then is the next ownership group going to be better? Cause the NHL is going back there. They're not giving up on that. If they didn't give up,
I don't think Gary should. I actually agree with Gary on this one. If that's his mentality, then I don't think he should, because I do think that the Coyotes can succeed there with the right ownership group. I've said it for years, and I'll die on that hill. I don't care. I'll die on it, because they were once a playoff team. In the 90s, they were a playoff team, and they were good. And they were just great. They were making the playoffs almost every year until you got rid of Roenick and Tkachuk. And that's really when everything started falling apart for them, is when they moved those two players. And so, I mean, and then they got back to the playoffs in 2012, and that atmosphere was electric in the playoffs when they made it all the way to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, and it looked like everything was going great. And then, you know, again, wheels fall off the cart. They decided to go into the tank. They didn't get Connor McDavid. Hell, they ended up with Dylan Strome when they could have had Jack Eichel as a consolation prize. So, but a good thing they rigged it for Edmonton to win that draft. I will never, ever think anything less than that for that draft. So, let me get back to what Pete's saying right here. But John Rattigan saying the Valley built a light rail system that doesn't go to Glendale. Yeah, and Glendale is an afterthought. And the reason why Glendale works for football is bigger out there, and also you have to go 8 times a year, maybe 9. You can't go 41 times to Glendale. It's 2.5 hours out of Phoenix. So actually, David,
Craig Morgan on Phoenix is saying that the players aren't excited about moving to Salt Lake City.
Because, yeah, again, part of the thing that goes into this is, and a lot of people said this, that the players like living in Arizona and playing hockey. They don't like playing for the Coyotes. And part of it has to do with the fact that the Coyotes have been jerked around so much. And the other thing is that they haven't had an owner, really, for the most part, for a long time. Urinating Tree did a great bit about this. And I encourage you to watch his video. But by the way, this is a problem, though. As Puck is saying right here, doesn't the huge transplanted population have something to do with the apathy? All those people like other clubs. I think all those people do like other clubs, but I think that's what tends to drive other fans away. Like, they know they can't get the tickets for that game. So, and it becomes like a home arena. But tell that to the Florida Panthers. The Florida Panthers now have a solid home base right now because they're good and people go to their games. And I've been to a Ranger Panther game. It was before the channel started, so I don't have any videos of it for a mark on the road. But that was a lot of hell. There was the only thing missing was the Rangers goal song. So
yeah, and you talk about enthusiasm, and that's, I mean, the comment that I highlighted before, I think from JE, where it says enthusiasm, you know, is always high when you're winning. Yeah, that's what happens. You know, people win, and their teams win, and people want to come watch the games. They want to come watch it at that point. And Arizona just needs to have stable ownership, and they need to have a plan, and they need to just keep having the guys. I mean, you have Clayton Keller, Logan Cooley, Lawson Krause. You've got good young players. They just need a few more pieces to the point where they become a true contender. And then when they become a true contender, you can see how well hockey can do in that market. And then once hockey starts consistently doing well in that market and they start making money and they're making the playoffs, then the ship will be righted and you'll understand that, hey, you know what? This team can do these things. It's just in this right here. The Coyotes failing is the same reason the Thrashers failed and even the Expos in Montreal. It's bad ownership.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it's come down to.
I will say the Expos, let's throw in the player strike, destroyed baseball.
Yeah, but they were still around for almost 10 years after that, and they just...
Yeah, but they never recovered.
I get it, but so the Expos, their problem also was is that they had guys like Larry Walker, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, Ramon Martinez, and they let all of that talent go.
Yes, but also with Pedro Martinez, because they didn't
let that much talent go from one roster, that's going to happen.
Well, first off, Phil, and by the way, Justin, I'll answer your question a little bit more going in depth in a second. But let's not forget they had so much talent by the time Omar Minaya got there in 2003, that, or it might have been 2004 when he made this trade, when it was Bartolo Colon going to the Montreal Expos from the Cleveland Indians, and he traded away Brandon Phillips, Grady Sizemore, and Cliff Lee. So there's the thumbs up, because what was the one the other day? I put my hands up and it was balloons or something like that. I forgot what it was.
Yeah, you balloons. I think you put your hands up and then it started popping up on the screen.
Yeah, so I mean, at least, or was it the thumbs up is balloons? Oh, it's fireworks whenever that happens. All right. Good to know that Max threw this in there for some reason. But yeah, they still had talent. They had talent evaluators that were good. And you look at that 94 team, Phil, that you were referencing. I mean, Randy Johnson being traded for, I believe that was Mark Langston. And that would basically say everything that you need to do. No, Randy Johnson was a late bloomer. But that 94 squad, Andres Galarraga, Vladimir Guerrero, I think Jose Vidro was still on the team. The line of the Shields. No, because he would be in LA at the moment. That team was incredible when you look at them. And Marquise Grissom, Moises Alou.
They had a ton of talent in the 90s that they just could not hold on to. And
because the economics of the game changed in 1995.
Yeah. It's sad, but I mean, yeah, north of the border baseball.
By the way, Justin was asking, have we played ice hockey or do we play hockey? You still play roller.
Yeah.
Because you said you haven't played in how many years, Ice?
Ice has been like 14 years, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still playing Ice. And sometimes I look at Maria and just say, I feel like I'm a rotting corpse. Remembering my glory days where it used to be 14, 15 goal seasons. Now, like, gee, can I at least get two? So I got to hopefully I make that farewell tour. Maybe I can get some gifts.
I don't think MLB is going back to Montreal. Sorry, just don't.
Not anytime soon. I don't know if MLB expands.
I think they're fine the way they are.
Yeah, I think they're kind of fine the way they are. And it is a little bit sad, Phil, because when you think about the history of baseball in Montreal, sorry guys about the tangent. I mean, Jackie Robinson started his professional career in Montreal. He went there first before moving on. I mean, the Expos, they were a damn good team for a long time. Expos got a couple Hall of Famers, Tim Raines, Andre Dawson, and Gary Carter. Like, I mean, these are all...
Yeah, you know what? There was a national rumor, and then I heard a Vegas rumor, actually, with Major League Baseball as well. But I think that was tied into Oakland moving.
I agree, by the way. If there's any place, I would say Nashville. I think we can assume nobody wants to go to Portland anymore. Those rumors.
No, I can't see a baseball team in Portland.
Can't see any team going in Portland anymore. They talked about that for hockey for a long time.
Yeah, that's why I said I think that had something to do with the A's going to Vegas. So, yeah, I said that right afterwards.
Yeah. So, we got that. We'll take a couple more questions, guys, whatever you got. But also, like I was saying, Justin, I'm still playing. Still trotting out there at 45 years old. Sometimes wondering why.
Let's go Volpe. Did something happen in the Yankee game? I guess they're on right now.
I guess a leadoff home run. Why are they doing all the 6:30 games?
It's not 6:30. Actually, it's 7 now. But so.
Steven's asking this one right here. Imagine if the Coyotes moved to Salt Lake City and then have a different license, return to Arizona, and as an expansion team, it would be the whole Cleveland Browns fiasco. Yeah, that would be. Or even the Winnipeg Jets fiasco. You could always go with that because, after all, if the Winnipeg Jets played the Arizona Coyotes and there was a record dating back to when the Jets were the Thrashers and a record dating back to when the Coyotes were the Jets, you need a scorecard just to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah. I mean, anyone getting exceptional status is cool. I mean, there are certain players. I mean, if anyone remembers Sean Day for the Rangers,
mm-hmm.
he had exceptional status and he ended up kind of flaring out. There was some personal stuff involved with that that really kind of went to his downfall. But yeah, I mean, it's good at just you want to get excited, but you got to be careful with something like this because sometimes players can peak earlier in development and be ahead of others, and then they just never get to that next level. So we'll see what happens with DuPont.
And Sean Day is one of those.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I know. Backing you up.
Yeah. The Cleveland Barons, yeah. I know they were a team, but I don't think any of us were really watching hockey when that happened. So
I was born in 78, and I'm the old man.
Yeah, so I can't really say that we remember them, but yes, we know who they are. Do I think Taija Gilla will be? I think Taija Gilla might end up being the best goal scorer in this draft.
Who'd have thought? I think his dad was okay.
Foligno, another one, had exceptional status, never lived up to it. Decent, okay player right now, but yeah.
By the way, Matt is apologizing. Yeah, for sending me down to Small Apple Hockey for saying that the Penguins were
Small Apple Hockey.
I mean, I actually do think there should be like a demotion for fans when they do the wrong chance. Like people spelling out the Mets at the Met game like it's the Jets. It's always Let's Go Mets. It's never J-E-T-S. Two different things. Anyway, But I said all season long that the Penguins were not a playoff team. And then they had to go on this run. Hopefully, you know, I'm going to be sweating it out for the next week, because I actually really think the Penguins are still not a playoff team. They really were scaring me, though. I thought they were going to get all the way to the three spot. I thought there was a chance. You can make it argue that they were this year's Florida, which, Filk, I would ask you that question. Is there a team you look at and go, they're this year's Florida? Because I was starting to say this just now when you were off the air or off camera, that I was starting to get scared that the Penguins could be this year's Florida, just because you throw in Nedeljkovic, he's basically doing what Alex Lyon did, and then we'd see what happens in the postseason. But obviously going to Bobrovsky changed a lot more, and Matt Tkachuk was playing out of his mind.
No, the Penguins are definitely not that team. Yeah. I don't see it at all. Their defense is horrendous. They have a +4 goal differential, and that's only because of the fact that they've had this run that they've had recently. The Rangers didn't show up to play against them last week, and that cost them. The only team that I would worry about that could really come out of nowhere and surprise everyone would probably be Tampa.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think they would surprise anyone.
I think they would, with the way that they're being. I mean, if you want a team that hasn't done it before, Nashville. Nashville, just because of the way that they're playing. I think they're beatable, but, I mean, they could get hot, go on a run, upset whoever they play in the first round, and maybe feed off that momentum. But Tampa is the one team that I look at and I could say, wow, you know what? They could be a real problem, because they have pieces that have gotten it done before. They know what they're doing. They know what they're up against. And their big guys all produce come playoff time. Victor Hedman's back to form, which is a big part of their success. And Andre Vasilevsky, like I said, I think it was 2 weeks ago I said it, one guy that you don't want to face come playoff time, especially if you're down in a series, you're facing elimination, because that guy's numbers are like Henrik Lundqvist in game sevens in elimination games, where he can has a chance to knock somebody out.
Yeah, he's absolutely deadly. I would probably say Nashville, because they got UC Soros. They've been going with the structure that they've had for a while. I mean, Florida was a nice story. Nashville seems like they're starting to really come on. And I'd worry about Nashville. Other than that, you know what? The Islanders were gaining momentum, but I don't know who their goalie is. And I don't think it's Varlamov. And I don't think he's going to – if he
I think falters, they may end up going with Varlamov. I mean,
I think the way that the
two of them are playing, they should. They should if they know what's good for them. I get it. You don't want to embarrass the franchise guy that's really your guy. But, I mean – Sorokin's not played well. He just hasn't. No. Just hasn't. But it's.
Can you go back to Sorokin, though? During the playoffs?
If Varlamov falters, yeah, you absolutely can. Look at the 2018 Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
Neuvirth was in net.
Yeah. That's true.
And then they – or no, was it Grubauer? Yeah, it was Grubauer, sorry. It was
Grubauer the first two games.
Yeah, Grubauer. I don't know why I said Neuvirth, but it was Grubauer. And then he lost the first two games. And then they went back – jeez, Giuseppe. And then they went back to Holpe, and they ended up going all the way. So, yeah, you can go back to a goaltender – even when you sit him, because it's been done before, and it's been done before recently. Or you know, Matt Murray, you know, that's another one. You want to talk about Matt Murray and the Penguins, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury got them to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2017. And then Matt Murray ended up winning them the cup in that Stanley Cup Finals round. So,
But also, those were different circumstances. Those were Marc-Andre Fleury was injured at first, and then Matt Murray took over that. That
was in 2016.
That was 2016. Then Matt Murray was injured and took over for Fleury. They didn't have to go back
over. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, 2017. Fleury took over with the injury, and then Matt Murray came back, and he won them the cup in that final round.
Anthony, if the Islanders, if you haven't didn't see the hear the start of this, if the Islanders decide to go with Varlamov, can they go back to Sorokin, and would it be effective?
Well, Varlamov has been really good the last three starts. His numbers have been fantastic. Over this five-game win streak, he's won three. Sorokin actually has won his last two starts, but Varlamov has played better over this last five-game stretch. So, you know, my guess is that, yeah, I mean, I think Varlamov's definitely going to play again against the Rangers on Saturday. I think they might go to Sorokin tomorrow against Montreal because obviously – you know, you don't want him going too long without playing. So I think Sorokin's going to get another shot on tomorrow. And I think they'll go back to Varlamov on Saturday against the Rangers. From there, I mean, once they make the playoffs, Waugh's going to have to make a decision at that point.
Yeah.
Who's playing better? Because Varlamov's been really good now. But the playoffs, if they make it, are still, what, a week away, 10 days away? So a lot can change then. It's going to, you know, depend on who's, you know, if Varlamov's keeping it up and he's still out playing him, then, yeah, I think he'll be the game one starter. But, you know, if Sorokin really turns it up here over these last four games, he could still be the guy. So I think it's still too early to say. But to answer the question, yeah, they could clearly go back to Sorokin even if Varlamov starts. If he falters in game one, then you go back to Sorokin. Simple
because I always wonder about playing mind games with goalies with that. You don't want to do that. And I don't like even alternating goalies anymore. Anymore. That my attitude changed after 1992. Phil, this one was up. I never got to ask you about this one. What do you think about Roslovic, what they're going to do with him? And if they move him off the first line, where are you playing him?
I'm almost ready to scratch him. I was waiting for him to respond last night, and there's just no life in this guy. No life in this guy. It just I don't see how he maintains a spot. And I've had people tell me, well, his transitional game because of his speed and his playmaking ability. What I mean, that doesn't mean anything come playoff time if he doesn't play like he cares. This guy loafs out there. At what point does this guy's leash just end completely? Because he's already been healthy scratched now, and he didn't respond last night at all. He was completely invisible. I didn't notice him at all. If I would have never heard his name, I wouldn't have known he was playing. So to follow up with this question, why can't anyone play with Mika and Kreider? It's Mika. Mika's the fucking problem. Sorry for the F-bomb there. But Mika's the problem. He's got 69 points this year. This is his worst year in 5 years now. Guy doesn't show up to play on most games, and he's just not getting the job done. He's supposed to be the play driver. You're the $8.5 million center. Start playing like it. Start playing like you care. Start skating. Start moving your feet, and start playing physically. Start. It's enough with the whole I don't want to hear it about Kreider. Kreider's also been bad, but Mika does not do enough. He doesn't. There's no excuse for him. There's no defending him. I really don't want to hear it. I don't, because you're getting paid $8.5 million to be the number one center on the team. You had 91 points last year. He looks worse at times than Alexander Ovechkin looks. Because Alexander Ovechkin for the last few years has really kind of been a power play merchant. Mika hasn't even been a power play merchant. He's barely streaked over a power play.
I wanted to ask you guys this. Not Panarin specific, actually. I'm going to make it just the team in general. Big if. But if the Rangers lost in the first round, what do you think the fallout would be for the summer? Because you're not going to fire a coach that you just won a President's Trophy with, and are you really going to fire your GM who just put together a team that won the President's Trophy or close to it? So if they lose in the first round, what do you think is the after effect or the fallout? What
would happen? Alexa, play Some Heads Are Gonna Roll by Judas Priest.
And I would say the first one that goes is Jacob Trouba. His no move kicks in.
Can they move him is really the question.
I think he's gone. I think they're going to look over and see that he's a problem. The last month is going to have to be Keandre Miller is being stunted by Jacob Trouba.
He's absolutely a problem. He would need to be traded. They would probably have to retain $1 million or $2 million on him in order to move him. And then they would have to buy out Barkley Goodrow. Barkley Goodrow, I think, is getting bought out regardless of what happens.
Yeah.
Even if they win a cup, I think he's getting bought out. Because they get a cap hit of about $248,000, cap credit, sorry, of $248,000 if they do it. So they actually add to their cap space by doing it. I don't think let's obviously hope that they don't get knocked out in the first round, but I tell you right now, they would have to move Jacob Trouba if that happens. So Miga Zibanejad's not getting moved. Trouba's the guy. I mean, you could move Kreider, but I would much rather move Trouba before I move either of those guys. I would rather go get those guys a first line left winger and give them and give them one more shot and say to them, this is your riot act. This is it. This is your last stand. You don't get this done, you're getting moved. And I would point right at Chris Kreider because Miga Zibanejad will get extremely upset like by that. And that'll get his wheels going because you know he doesn't want his best friend moving.
I think they're not going to have to worry about a first round upset. It's going to be a very long shot, but it's still there's a lot of things, a lot of moving parts with that. I think it's Trouba. Trouba's the one that I look at and go, they're going to move him. They're going to definitely move him.
They have to.
And what I do have to say, and I wrote about this a while ago, Chris Kreider has been more productive 5-on-5 with Derek Stepan than he is Miga Zibanejad. And before everybody's going, no. The numbers pan out the other way, going that he's got to do more. Zibanejad's got to do more, get the team incorporated, and get everyone involved. Look, you're hampered because you don't have Pavel Buchnevich. Boo-hoo. That's what happens. He was a cap casualty. So, sorry, guys. All right. Guys, we're going to cut it off here tonight. I know we got a lot of you guys that are joining in on us. 106 right now. Guys, thank you all very much.
Please like, share, and subscribe.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of other people in there, but I've got plenty of things on my agenda. Oh, wait. Jack's saying wait. Jack for the Islanders is saying wait. Yeah, Jack, you don't have to worry. We were talking a lot of Islanders today, too. But, wow, you'd rather have McDonough than Trouba. That's a pretty good one.
And that's also a layup.
Yeah. I mean, Trouba, look, here's the thing about Trouba. Jack is asking, do you think the Islanders make it?
I think they have it pretty much locked down. I mean, I don't see how they... So the Islanders' schedule to end the season is not crazy by any means. I mean, they have the Rangers again, and I imagine the Rangers are not going to take what happened to them last night lightly.
Nope. Especially
with the Pelech hit on Zibanejad. I think that's going to piss them off, or they're going to come out with somebody like Rempe in the lineup.
Well, I got that for you right there, and the records.
And, yeah, it's – Montreal should be a game that they should win.
Should.
The Rangers is a tough game. New Jersey, that's going to be a tough game because they're going to come out and they're going to play. Even though we're there without Jack Hughes, they're going to come out and they're going to play hard. They will want to play spoiler. And Pittsburgh is fighting for a spot. So you know that Pittsburgh is going to give them everything that they have.
Yeah.
They are going balls to the wall, and they've got two motivated superstars that are playing very well right now.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it all closes out.
Okay. We'll see about that one. Let's see you guys make it past Carolina first before you start talking about playing the Rangers. I would calm down over there, bud.
And also, just to say this, the last time they played, the Islanders had the Rangers number for multiple years, and they got swept. So, all right. We'll see about that one. Guys, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us today on Big Apple Hockey's Bar Talk. Oh, shit. Or the entire show, I should say. Ugh. All right. Philk, what's your last words?
Let's just get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I know. Let's get to the playoffs. Thanks, everybody, and watch for more segments of the show coming this week. Talk to you soon.